Let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
I'm Kevin.
And this is 6 Degrees of Schwarzenegger, the podcast where we take a long, hard look at some of our favorite action movies from the era of Arnold.
Schwarzenegger is the icon of the genre, and we're taking a deep dive into some of these 80s and 90s cult action movies and breaking them all the way down.
All the way down. I just want to take a moment to say that we're in episode 4, so Kevin and I are pretty lit at this point.
It's the penultimate episode.
We're 3 old fashions in. We just busted open Tall Boys of Sweetwater's 420, which is an Atlanta brewery.
Yeah, the Atlanta flagship
That's
beer.
That's right. Yeah, everybody knows 420 down here in Atlanta. And this is the part of the show where things get weird, not only within the movie, but also for us, because... I mean, the way we do this, generally speaking, we're going to give you a little bit of inside baseball here. We try to just make a night of it, and we do every episode back to back. We keep getting a little bit drunker and a little bit drunker over the course of the episodes, and frankly, that's half the fun. I mean, for me, yeah, I can't speak to Kevin.
I like it.
And hopefully our slurring isn't so bad that you guys don't appreciate it.
Of course, but, yeah.
I mean, look, I just have a good time. I'm here to talk about great bad movies and great movies and drink a little booze. So
yeah.
I'm happy to be here.
We're here, though. We're back on our Action Jackson shit. I'll try to recap what's happened in the plot.
It's gotten complicated.
It's about
now.
To get a little weird. Yeah. No, there's been in Detroit, there's been a series of murders of like auto worker union guys, right?
Yeah.
So we don't really know what's going on, but there's this cop named Action Jackson. And he's got this beef with this auto manufacturer owner named Delaplane for reasons that are very convoluted, but it's something to do with his something that the Delaplane guy's son did some years ago. So Action Jackson, he's convinced this guy must be the bad guy, right? And he's got a buddy of his named Tony who told him, yeah, this Delaplane is bad news. He's probably the one who's killing these guys. Then Tony promptly got killed too. But not before telling Action Jackson, you should go talk to my mistress. Or no, you should go talk to Delaplane's mistress,
yeah.
Because obviously she would know all about his crimes.
Clearly.
Which she doesn't. She knows nothing about his
nothing.
Crimes, as we come to find out.
Right.
But he goes and he meets with Delaplane's wife for a little bit, who's played by the lovely Sharon Stone.
Yes.
Who did get naked in this picture.
As did Vanity. To be honest, to be fair.
So she, Sharon Stone assured him basically that Delaplane's not a bad guy. He wouldn't be mixed up in anything terrible. So you got the wrong idea if you think he's the bad guy. But Action Jackson doesn't really believe that. Then there's a crazy car chase. Action Jackson, though, doesn't catch the bad guy. The bad guy gets away. But Sharon Stone later gets killed by her husband, Delaplane, when he finds out that she even talked to Action Jackson, even though she was assuring him that, like, he didn't do anything wrong.
Yes.
So now Action Jackson, at this point, he goes and he finds that mistress, Vanity, who's a heroin addict.
Yep.
Who has just shot up heroin. She's really horny for some reason. She wants to fuck Action Jackson. They try to go back to his place, but Sharon Stone's body is there and there's police everywhere. So they wind up going back to her place, which has also been wired to explode for some reason. So her place just blew up and they ran out of there. And I just gotta say, this plot is elaborate. To the point that it also just becomes incoherent, this plot, right?
So I will say that the plot of Face Off was also elaborate, but I understood what was going
yes.
on, right?
The issue with this movie is they've got way too many characters
yes.
in this movie,
yes.
right? We got 4 union guys dead already, yep. 5 if we count the secretary.
Yep.
By 5 fucking killers.
Yep.
Like, there's 5 of these dudes.
Yeah, we have an ex-partner plus
and not
a police
one of,
chief.
Not even one of them is the big bad guy.
No, none of them
are. The big bad guy also has 2 to 3 other henchmen.
Yes, that's right.
And then there's also two women in danger.
Yep.
There's like five law enforcement characters that are inconsequential, really. Then we got the purse snatching hoodlum. And there's like more new characters on the way.
We're about to meet.
There's a lot more new characters coming.
We are not even done yet.
So in my mind, like I keep comparing this movie to Beverly Hills Cop and the movie Commando.
Yeah.
Which, so Commando had something similar where there's like a bunch of guys got killed in the beginning and it was like a montage of assassinations. But in that movie, you had them all get killed and then you immediately explain how that was all connected. And Beverly Hills Cop did it even better.
Yep.
Where it's like, you just get one guy get killed, the hero's friend. That's all you need.
All you need.
The bad guy can have one henchman. That's all you need.
Yeah.
Imagine this movie, if it had been, instead of five assassins, if it had just been one really good assassin, right? It'd be a better story. This movie's just weird.
There's so much going on.
There's too much that it, you can't, no one could keep track of all the characters in this movie.
No, absolutely not. Especially when you're four episodes in and you're not, definitely not sober at this point.
but we can move into the plot.
Thank God for
loosely.
Notes.
I'll use the word loosely.
I mean, if there, as in as much, I mean, are we going to call it a plot or just, this is more of a sequence of events.
It's a sequence. It's a bunch of scenes that were edited together.
Yeah. I love the idea that this was actually like three separate movies that were not complete.
Well, I have theories about the origins of this movie. We'll talk about that later.
We'll talk about that later. But we should move into part four, which, by the way, we're not even an hour into the movie at this point.
No.
We're still like 6 minutes away from the hour mark. So we're 2/3 of the way through the movie.
Sure.
And I would argue that we're not even like plot-wise. We just met the midway point, right?
Right, yes.
So there's just not a lot going on in this movie. Okay. Vanity's apartment has exploded for reasons that we don't understand and we languished about for far too long last episode. We couldn't come to a conclusion, but we're moving on. So they're speeding away and Vanity says that they need to go back for her purse.
Her purse.
Also known as heroin.
Right. She's ready to run into a burning building to get that heroin.
To get that heroin.
Which I think that's how heroin is, right?
Yeah, I believe it. I mean, like that was probably her most like honestly and believably delivered line in the entire film. She says that she needs her makeup, though. Like, that's her excuse.
Of course.
And Action Jackson says she looks beautiful, which is, how adorable. She's flattered, and Action seems flustered, which, again, like, who is this character?
Which, Action or Vanity?
Action Jackson. Like, now he's flustered by women, and, like, anyway, he's
been pretty
sexless up to this point. We want him to be,
like, a smooth
guy. So.
I mean, honestly, other than the fact that Vanity is hot as hell.
Yeah.
I don't know why he would be into her at all. She's like a drug addicted, you know,
opposites
mistress
attract?
Of your sworn enemy.
That's the reason
he
though,
wants
like,
to fuck his enemy's girl.
It's like if I'm going to get super geeky here, it's like Batman and the Joker. The reason why the Joker is so obsessed with Barbara Gordon and he shoots her and the Killing Joke is because he knows the whole association. Well, actually he's trying to, anyway, I lost the thread there. I was trying to go geeky with it, and then I screwed up the entire plot of that comic book anyway. So, sorry. It's episode four, everybody. So, Jackson seems flustered, who has been, to this point, a completely sexless character. Like, we've got no sense of...
Yeah.
That he's like, he might as well be a robot up to this point, even though he does rock some pretty awesome 80s costumes. Anyway... He gets over the flustering and he drives into this rat infested alley behind a seedy motel because this is, it's a safe house, I guess. Okay.
Sure.
Right. And he says no one will find them here. Debatable. It's a movie, but all right, let's go with it. Inside, the manager, Chino's Fats Williams, everybody, ladies and gentlemen. If you don't recognize a man, you recognize his voice for sure.
Yes. Oh. He's a fucking legend, Chino Fats.
Oh,
he's had
God.
A, like little bit parts in like some of the biggest movies. That he was in. He was the guy driving the garbage truck in the very beginning of The Terminator.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Roadhouse. He was just the guy who like Patrick Swayze gave his car away to in the early part. He was apparently in Rocky 1, 2, and 3 in little bit parts.
Oh, interesting. I don't remember that at all.
He was in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Yeah,
I remember driving like the shuttle bus.
Yeah.
He was in Iron Eagle, which I swear, listeners, we will get around
to doing Iron Eagle.
It's on my list of things I have to do before I die.
Yeah.
Is dive deep into Iron Eagle because I'm crazy.
It will get there.
But yeah, Chino Fats Williams.
Yeah. So happy, always happy to have him in the movie.
Yeah. I don't know what his, where he comes from. I was trying to research him earlier and I couldn't find like an, I felt like there must have been a big profile written about him at some point and I couldn't find it.
I don't know.
It doesn't exist on the internet.
All I know is I could listen to that man talk forever.
He kind of talks like this.
I can't even do it. It's like
his tongue is too big or something.
It's so weird, but it's so raspy and it's so... Anyway, he's watching Flintstones, ladies and gentlemen. Like, when we watch it...
He's watching, he says, Yabba-dabba-doo! Or some shit.
So we've got Perfect Strangers at this point, and now we're on the Flintstones on the TV. So Action Jackson and Vanity walk in... And Jackson and Fats are immediately friendly with each other. So I feel
like they knew each other before.
Yeah, they knew each other before. Yeah. So Jackson reveals
that... Where did Fats come from? He popped up from below the desk.
Yeah,
like he just rises up. Is that where his TV is down there?
Yeah,
he's like
exactly.
Hunkered down?
Oh my God. I don't know. It is pretty hilarious. Like every scene that this guy is in is fucking gold.
And you can only understand about 50% of what he's even saying.
So Jackson reveals that Fats used to be this amazing boxer named Kid Sable.
Yeah,
and
sure.
They have, and they proceed to have this just meaningless conversation.
It's completely inconsequential.
No, I don't even remember what it is. Like it doesn't.
Like, he was like, "What happened to you? I haven't heard your name much anymore." And he's like, "She divorced me," is his answer. Like, what the fuck?
Right. That's it.
I thought there was a chunk of that conversation cut out, the middle chunk.
I know.
And then he's like, "Not much of a wife." And he's like, "Well, okay, well, tell me more about your boxing. Tell me more about the boxing in the old days." It's just weird.
They finally get around this meaningless babble. And Jackson asks for a room on a mostly empty floor. And says Vanity has a quote-unquote sweet tooth, which I guess means drug habit.
Maybe. I'm not familiar with that term.
No, I'm not either. But like
the implication.
What
is
it? The protein pickup. So we're not exactly like, we're not working on the finest idioms on this movie, everybody. But
Fats is like, "I'm going to send some breakfast up for you in the morning."
Okay, I love the idea that a fucking dirt motel like this has room service.
I'm not fucking with that breakfast.
I ain't going to eat that shit.
Yeah, I'll pass on that.
Not happening. So they get up to the hotel room, and Vanity immediately plops down on the bed. She's probably come down on the high or something. And Jackson calls her out on her drug use, and she says, fucking get off my back. Leave me alone, right? And she says that she's done a lot of shit she'd rather forget about, and the drugs help, which honestly like might be the truest line of dialogue she has in this entire movie. But then she completely shifts gears. Like just this almost like an actual poignant moment that could make this character worth listening to. Mm-hmm. And then her next line is "one more chance, wanna fuck?" Which
holy shit. Which that's a firm yes for me.
Oh my God, yes. But I mean,
but actually, since he's a stronger man,
his line of dialogue, his response is, "What would I want with a junkie like you?"
He's an abusive sort of dude.
Wow. What a way to come back on someone who clearly desperately needs help. But this is the movie. Anyway, so
he just shut the lights off.
Turns the lights off,
and then just staring at her in the darkness. That shot lingered for a long time.
Too long. The next morning, Vanity was waking up, and understandably, is in a pretty bad state. She's banging on the bathroom door, and Jackson steps out clearly from a shower. This was clearly, "I need to see you shirtless," right?
Of course, we gotta get some of that.
Gratuitous.
He's all oiled up.
Oh my God. I've never, it's just no one walks out of the shower looking that way, right? Like, it was unbelievable.
And he handed her a box of, like, rat poison, and he was like, "Here's your fix."
Here's your fix.
It was fucking weird.
Dude, this was, the 80s was peak drug war, right? Like,
No and all that.
Yeah, every arcade game had, like, the federal logo about don't do drugs and all that shit. Mm-hmm. Like, every game had that logo on it. So, we are peak paranoia about drugs at this point. So, it strikes me that this is definitely trying to capitalize on that. But there's a knock on the door. Oh my God, they actually got room service in the seedy ass motel.
Yeah.
Vanity opens it. like without any hesitation, her entire apartment had just been blown up.
Wasn't that weird?
It is so fucking weird.
I feel like Action Jackson should not be like letting anyone open the door for strangers.
Right. Like this is one of those moments like in any other action movie, he like immediately grabs his gun. Yeah. And she's like pushing her back and then he peeks up, you know, like, you know what the scene is supposed to play out. And instead, Vanity just opens the door. Like, is this a romantic comedy? But breakfast is, in fact, being delivered by everybody. Give you a second to guess who it is. Are you ready? It's the fucking hoodlum character who has been plaguing this movie since the first scene.
Right. He's done nothing.
Nothing.
He just is there always.
Oh, my God. He walks in with a tray of food and he says, "You're Action Jackson."
Uh-huh.
Jackson takes the breakfast tray. The hoodlum backs out of the door, and that's his scene. That is his contribution to the scene.
Why is he in this movie?
I have no idea.
They won't let it go like 10 minutes without him having an appearance.
I know. It is bizarre. It is bizarre. And this is not the last we've seen of him, by the way.
Not at all.
No. So Vanity wants to know what's wrong with Action Jackson. And like, why didn't you try to fuck me? Like, it's just like she is really hung up on why this guy doesn't want to fuck her.
It was also like, why didn't you try to fuck me when I was high?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Like not when I was impaired,
This is so fucking 80s. Her like, the reason she says is like, well, you must be queer or a cop, which is like, God damn. Like,
that's a bizarre.
Yeah, and his response is, I'm no queer. And I'm like, okay, movie, you need to slow down a little bit for a second because this is getting out of hand. Because not only do we have like these horrible pejoratives, he's also a homophobe on top of all of this.
Everyone's homophobic in this thing, though.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's like everything has taken a weird turn at this point. He says, you know, anyway, but he says, I am, in fact, a sergeant in the Detroit Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she's sort of shocked by, or not shocked by this. And Jackson says, like, I need you to get me to Delaplane. Like, so he sort of reveals that he's using her to a certain extent.
Right.
Anyway, he calls her worthless chunky again and tells her to get freshened up because they got work to do.
It's like, it's nonsensical dialogue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he's like, I need your help.
Yeah.
And then she's like, oh, you need me, huh? And he's like, what makes you think I need a worthless junkie like you?
Oh my God.
And it's like, dude, you just said you need her.
Mm-hmm.
She's not making this up. He's gaslighting her.
That's a good point. I was sort of underplaying
it's
that.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
It's same thing with the Aruni earlier or whatever. Like, this guy named Aruni, I never heard of him. Have you ever heard of him before, though? What?
I love the idea.
Motherfucker, what?
That Action Jackson is using him ripping the arm off of Delaplane's son as the excuse for why he got divorced and demoted. When in reality, probably the reason he got divorced is because he kept gaslighting his ex-wife and she was done with it.
I'm
tired of this codependent relationship.
He's like an emotionally abusive dude from what I've seen.
He absolutely is manipulative at the very least. I will say, though, in the next scene, bro walks out of the apartment and he is rocking a red Henley like nobody's business.
He's filling that thing out.
Oh my God, that motherfucker is cut. Like, there is not an ounce of fat on him. And so, but while they're leaving, Vanity is like, why can't I just score a little? I just need a little bit of heroin. Just need a little fix.
That's like just a little heroin.
Yeah, just a little bit, though.
I feel like, though, that's not what withdrawal looks like, which like laughing and joking.
Yeah. This is not right.
I've seen The Basketball Diaries. I know what's up.
I've seen Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah,
I know
absolutely.
What's up.
I don't think you're like in a good mood.
Yeah, exactly. He says no, and then they turn into the alley where his car has been stripped to the bones.
That sucks.
Nothing left. It hurt, actually. Yeah. That was a beautiful car. It was a beautiful car. Jackson laments that his car is ruined. And then he sort of lamely puts the convertible top up. Huh. And that might be the most emotional scene in the entire movie. He has a better connection with his car than he does any of the female characters or male characters for that matter in this entire movie. Anyway, Vanity is still rightly like hopped up on that. She needs some dope. They leave the alley and some young dude bumps into Jackson and they apologize. He's clearly pickpocketed.
Right.
Action Jackson.
Right.
And he's picked up. Yeah. The kid pickpockets his wallet, looks at it, sees that a police ID, and then tosses the wallet off and then runs away.
And that's never relevant.
That's it.
Again.
No, it doesn't. It's done. That's it. We're done. Thank you, everybody.
Also, I'll put out, according to the ID, Jackson is 50 years old.
Yeah.
Which is well older than Carl Weathers was.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm just like, that's weird. Is he really supposed to be 50?
I don't. It's
that's bizarre. It said like date of birth 38.
Yeah, which is like insane to me. No, there's no way.
I think Carl Weathers was like in his maybe early 40s at this time.
I feel like whoever like created that prop just typed in a random
absolutely
date
no
of
one's
birth.
Ever gonna see this.
No one ever gonna see this.
There was that probably VHS was barely a thing. They're
right,
like,
exactly.
Yeah, no,
let alone like
I was gonna pause that. They gotta fuck with
Blu-ray.
They're gonna fuck with the tracking.
Yeah, exactly. just do whatever. It doesn't even fucking matter.
I just took him way back. If you know what tracking is on the VCR, you're our target audience. I'll just put it that way. You probably paused trying to get some nudity off of the VHS tape. Mm-hmm. You had to fuck with the tracking to move the staticky lines around.
I mean, if you're like me, the nudity parts are the ones that needed the most tracking because they're the ones who were watched the
you
most.
You wore that tape out. I got you. Imagine if you had the VHS of this Sharon Stone and Vanity.
Oh, man.
Hot.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway.
All right, we're making a podcast here.
Put your pants back on, Eric.
Where did that come from? Anyway, so they've walked away, and they've taken Action Jackson has taken Vanity to a pool hall where they meet an old informant named Papa Doc.
It's unclear why this informant would have any information that would help.
At all, but I do love the name Papa Doc. That was fun.
That was the name of Anthony Mackie's character in 8 Mile.
Oh, I didn't know
as
that.
As well, which has to have been a reference to this movie.
I've got
to
believe it. Like, it's so
another
specific.
Another Detroit movie.
Yeah. So Action Jackson is going to meet Papa Doc. And at this point, he knows that his wallet is missing. And Vanity tells him, you sure are some kind of a detective. You could teach Mr. T a thing or two. With thinking like that, you'll be on the A-team in no time.
This is bizarre dialogue.
Which is interesting, especially given that the director directed a few episodes of the A-team.
But also, like the A-team weren't detectives.
No, they weren't.
They were just
mercenaries.
Like hired mercenaries. Yeah, they were
exactly.
hired muscle.
I know.
It's just weird. It doesn't actually make sense, but okay.
I wonder if they're just trying to shoehorn in some sort of
an A-team
joke.
Reference,
yeah,
probably.
It was popular, so who knows. So they're immediately eyeballed by this massive dude who's working behind the bar.
That was the character. He was in Commando as well. Who is Enriquez, the guy who Schwarzenegger killed on the plane right before they took off. He might have shoved his nose up into his brain because it was like a one elbow to the face
killed him. Yeah, definitely. Awesome.
He also might have been wearing the same costume that he was wearing in Commando.
The two best kills in 80s action movies are railing kills where you throw someone over a railing and nose into the brain kills. Those are the two
absolutely
best kills,
the
bar
peak.
None.
That's the peak that 80s kills.
Peak 80s kills. Yeah. Anyway, so he says, like, what do you want? He says, we're looking for Papa Doc. And the big guy says, wait a minute, I'll take you to him. And so the big guy goes to the end of the bar, whispers into another tough.
Nothing suspicious about
nothing.
This.
Nothing. This is all above board. Everything is normal, everybody.
For sure.
Anyway, he comes back and he says, you know, go this way. Follow me. So Jackson, to his credit, he kind of senses a trap and he says Vanity should wait at the bar. Okay. All right.
He's like a dick too, though, because he's like, you know, basically if I can score any heroin, I'll bring some.
Yeah,
for
it was
you.
Like the line was, if they give me any smack, I'll be sure to save some for
weird.
You.
Weird.
God okay. damn. Yeah. Anyway, so they go to the back room, and the back room is, of course, empty. And Action Jackson asks where Papa Doc is, and the big guy tells him to open the cabinet at the back of the room. So he does, and we see a small jar with two testicles in them. The way I love this shot because it's actually shot behind the cabinet. So they like put a backless cabinet up and then shot through it. Like our POV is through the cabinet.
It was
so
testicle vision.
The testicle vision. It was. It was from the POV of the testicles, which is just amazing. Maybe my favorite shot of the whole movie. So the big guy says that's all that's left of Papa Doc. And he breaks a beer over Action Jackson's head.
He's like, it's his balls.
Boom. Like, there's no patience. Yeah, there's no, like, delay here.
Have you ever seen anyone get hit in the head with a beer bottle in real life?
No, it hurts. Like, it's just
I
like
haven't
a
seen
thunk.
It. I feel like the bottle doesn't break,
it doesn't
though.
Break. No.
You have to really smoke somebody to break it.
Oh, yeah. Those bottles, like, I mean, I have dropped plenty of bottles. It doesn't have to be beer bottles. Any bottle on a ground in my kitchen and it hasn't broken.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's just, it happens all the time in movies. All the time. I feel like it never happens.
They're all
life.
Made of sugar glass in movies.
Yes, of course.
Right, so everything just shatters instantly. But yeah, no, those bottles don't break easily, right?
Yeah.
It is funny, though, how like trained we've become, though, because I imagine like if I've never seen a bar brawl.
Okay.
But I would imagine if a bar brawl broke out wherever I was and people started hitting each other with beer bottles and they didn't break, I think I would actually be disappointed.
Yeah. Aw. Movies have lied to me.
Later on, Jackson finally regains consciousness and he's being held by one big guy, the big guy from the bar, and then another dude who just looks like a really rough motherfucker.
yeah.
And then there's this very, very talkative gentleman who was just rifling through his pockets.
That guy, the chatty guy, was Miguel A. Nunez Jr.
Okay.
Who played DJ in the Street Fighter movie.
Did he?
He also was in Lethal Weapon 3.
Oh my God.
And
okay.
But I mainly remember him, like, he had this really tiny role in one of the old Friday the 13th movies.
Yeah.
And then the other dude, the one who was not Enriquez from Commando, the guy who he went and whispered in his ear in the bar, I looked him up on IMDb to see what else he was in, and his, like, still was that he was the Libyan, like, with the rocket launcher from Back to the Future. The one, like, out of the top of the Volkswagen van with the rocket launcher.
Yeah.
I was like,
oh yeah.
Hell yes.
Oh, lovely. I
That's
love
amazing
this.
Amazing to me.
Love this. All right. So, he doesn't find anything in Jackson's pocket and just starts speaking. I think you're not supposed to understand
right.
what
the
he's
point.
Saying.
It's like it was nonsense. Weird slang.
Yeah, it's just like nonsense slang. And Jackson is like, I don't understand a single word that you guys, you're saying. Like, I'm yeah. completely done.
Then the guy, the one bit I understood was like, you're dissing me. Don't diss me. And I'm like, oh, that's a bit of slang that actually, like, became mainstream.
Yeah, I mean, it did become mainstream.
Right?
Yeah, but that's about it, though. The chatty guy signals another goon to come. Like, we need more goons for this
scene.
There
are four goons in this, and they all have dialogue.
I know.
It's like, have these guys never seen a movie?
The budget for this movie must have been completely spent on the actors, because you don't have to pay extras who don't speak.
Yeah.
Right?
There's supposed to be one. So you're supposed to have the group of goons. There's one guy who's the leader who does the talking for the group.
For the group.
And everyone else just sits there and waits until it's time to get their ass kicked.
Right. The new goon has lines, though.
He comes in,
and he's like, why are you asking about Papa Doc?
That dude was also mad familiar. He's an actor named Branscum Richmond. He was in Commando. He was in Kindergarten Cop, Hard to Kill, and like a million TV roles.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, it's just like, I'm like, you brought over another guy who's going to talk. Now he's the front man for the group.
Anyway, so like, basically, Action Jackson answers a question with a question. This is like, he wants to know what happened to fucking Papa Doc.
Sure.
Papa Doc is a main character all of a sudden, and the only part of him that's in this movie are his testicles. I'm just saying. Like, he's a critical part of the scene, and he's not really in it.
Yep.
Anyway, mostly at least. So, the guy says that Papa Doc used to feed them lots of information, but then they found out that he was giving all that to the cops as well. He was a CI. He was a confidential informant.
He said he was a regular Library of Congress.
Which is like the
second Library of Congress reference in this movie.
Why?
Which is much more than the average mentions of Library of Congress in a movie, which is zero.
Zero is right. Generally speaking.
You got two.
Yeah.
Twice in one movie. It's bizarre.
But mad respect for the goon who can speak jive, but also knows what the Library of Congress is. So anyway, the new goon asks Action Jackson if he's heard the sound of a man getting his balls cut off. These guys are obsessed with testicles.
Absolutely.
Jackson shakes his head and says no, which, fair.
Right? That's most of us.
Yeah. Then his response is awesome because it makes zero sense. He says, well, then you're in for a big treat because it's hot dog time. A.
That's a wild. That's a wild. That's a wild line.
Why did you go? He could have said like cherry tomatoes or grapes or the thing he's cutting his off isn't the hot dogs.
That's so weird.
Like, oh my God, it's so bizarre because it's like you're not even at the right part of the genitalia.
Yeah, dude.
I feel like if I were Action Jackson, I would be asking questions about
hot
like,
dog time.
I'm concerned about your understanding of anatomy. Anyway, so the chatty guy, he whips out a big knife. And he stabs it at Action Jackson's crotch, but
which is not how you would go about cutting balls off.
If you're just going to stab in that general direction, you're going to take everything. So anyway, Action Jackson leaps out of the way, and then out of nowhere, because no one saw this coming, Vanity bursts in and says to leave her brother alone, and says that he just got out of the loony bin because he thinks he's some kind of a holy messenger.
Sure.
Great. Awesome.
This bit is so terrible and weird.
I understand why Vanity was nominated for a Razzie for this. Not that she had a lot of work with, but she wasn't doing her best to deliver it in the first place.
Not at all.
So Jackson follows her lead. He picks it up pretty quick and he just starts talking religious gibberish. Gospel music actually swells.
That was weird.
Which is... Anyway,
sometimes I like to imagine how I would feel if I was in 1988 and I had gone to the theater to see this movie. And I feel like I'd be fucking pissed off at this point. Like I'm mad at the movie. It's so disrespectful to the viewer. I think
I know. But anyway,
it's like, what do you think of me? Do you think that I'm going to be satisfied by this bullshit?
Maybe people
I could be a roadhouse right now or whatever.
I mean, I was like, what, 7 in 88? And I feel like I would have noticed that this was just like totally fucking random.
It's like this movie's all over the place.
It's just so crazy. Anyway, so he says something about laying his healing hands on the goons who are justifiably totally believing that he is crazy. And at that point that Jackson like beats the shit out of all of them.
he unleashes
fury.
He goes to work.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean he becomes like a superhero. Like the shit that he does in this fight sequence is absolutely ridiculous.
It's like he's a superhero, but his superpower is police brutality. Like, because he's a terrible cop.
Right. Right,
He's sucked. He's no closer to getting any answers in this case, right? He's
nothing.
Detective work eludes him, but he's really good at just thrashing bad guys.
He literally had Tony like lay it all out for him, and all he needed to do was find the little pieces that connected it, and he hasn't even been able to complicate
that. He's further away now than he was.
He literally actually is. Yeah, exactly.
Is Action Jackson, is he a mere mortal or is he like something more? Because the shit he's doing to these guys.
This scene is completely unhinged.
It's like superhuman shit.
Right. And so when the big dude from earlier is trying to sneak away, like I'm like, yeah, I would be doing that right now too. Yeah. Like what drug this motherfucker is on, I don't want any piece of. So Jackson says, though, that he can't let him leave without giving him an amen. At which point he throws the motherfucker 20 feet through a closed door.
Yeah, it's
like,
crazy.
It's just, it's bonkers. Like, there's no sense of scale in this movie at all. So Jackson and Vanity are walking out of the pool hall, and that she brags that she saved him. Legitimately, she totally fucking did. And he says that they saved each other, and she remarks that they make a pretty good team. Aw, what an unnecessarily sweet moment.
Yeah, she's trying.
It's so weird. But anyway, he comes back with a rejoinder that says, forget it, because he doesn't work with junkies, which
he's back on his bullshit.
Oh my God, man, this guy. Yeah. So he says that she seems really smart and asks why she's late wasting her life on drugs. And I can practically hear Nancy Reagan in the background slow clapping, you know, like Nancy Reagan watched this and she was all there for it. Anyway, she gets sad and asks why she needs to remind her again, because she did say, like, I got shit that I don't want to remember earlier.
Yeah, sure, right, yeah, yeah.
But she also indicates that, yeah, I'm jonesing again.
I don't feel like this is what heroin withdrawal looks like.
No, though. It's not.
Right?
No.
Aren't you like, you're laid up in a bed and shivering and like puking everywhere? Like,
yeah, exactly.
And you're not like out joking and like gallivanting around with Action Jackson.
You're not making quips.
This, yeah.
and like improving scenarios to get out of having your testicles cut off.
This was the weird bit where the wall, like along where they were walking, was like lined with posters for Predator.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah,
that's pretty
right.
Wild.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy.
There was all sorts of wild shit happening. There was like a group of like four white dudes sort of like doing doo-wop music around like busking, you know?
Yeah, and, that's right.
Like they were credited as the Knutson Brothers.
The Knutson Brothers.
Right. A bunch of like Viking, like Nordic, Scandinavian.
I love
doo-wop guys.
That's great.
But yeah. Weird shit.
So all this crazy shit is happening while she's jonesing, but they eventually make it back to the seedy hotel, and Jackson tells Vanity to go up to the room, and he speaks with Fats for a bit. So Fats says that he could have told Action Jackson that Papa Doc wasn't around anymore, and you're like, wait, movie, why did the Papa Doc scene happen then?
He's a shitty detective.
You're literally telling me that, like, oh,
yeah, I gotta told you, he's dead.
Oh my god.
He's like, his balls are on a shelf in the pool hall.
We wouldn't have had that entire amazing scene though.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Jackson says, yeah, I know now. And it says that that his balls almost winded up on the shelf next to Papa Doc's balls. Which, okay. So anyway, there's no leads. And he's like, oh, I'm flummoxed. I don't know what to do. At which point, Fats tells him to go to the barbershop around the corner and ask for D.
No explanation for why she would have useful information.
If D were the barber for the police department,
yeah,
this movie would have been over an hour ago.
I feel like this is one line of dialogue in a script. You go talk to D, whatever, like... She cuts hair for half of the people in the union.
Yeah, exactly.
You could just add anything that would explain why she would know anything.
There is no context for this character, ladies and gentlemen, but she is maybe my favorite character in the whole movie, actually. She's in the movie for...
One scene?
It's
literally one long continuous take.
One monologue.
One camera shot.
Yeah, exactly. A single take. It is the artiest moment in this entire movie. And here it goes. So she's giving Action Jackson a shave, and she just drops all of the dirty on Delaplane. Like, everything. She knows everything. We don't know why.
She had, like, big energy.
Just everything.
She's coming in hot. I didn't recognize her from anything else.
Not at all.
I thought she was probably, like, a singer. Like, I thought, like, oh, this makes sense that she was, like, a cameo, like, she was a Motown artist. Like, she had that, like, Aretha Franklin type of, like, she's kind of a bigger girl, like, someone who really could sing,
know?
But no, she's not at all.
No. Nope.
I looked her up. I'm not familiar with the other shit she's done, but nothing apparently gives her greater joy than, like, snitching to the police, though.
No, this is what her joy is.
She lives for this.
She lives for it. Right, exactly. She gets sad on a Saturday night when a detective is not calling her.
Like, which I feel like that's not, you know, usually if you're snitching to the police, you're persona non grata.
Right,
In the hood, you know.
Not D, though.
Not her.
Because D tells Action Jackson that Delaplane's former partner was this, like, Italian dude who had this elite group of bodyguards that he called the Invisible Men. Like, already she has way too many details.
How does she know
any of this? So Jackson points out that his business partner was killed, though. And her response is, clearly Delaplane paid them even better. And so that they turned on the partner.
Like,
why does she know this? I don't know.
Why is the plot so convoluted?
I don't know.
There's nothing Italian about these guys.
Nothing Italian about these guys.
These are the most American motherfuckers ever.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So... D says that he also used these invisible men to kill his first wife and would have used them to kill Action Jackson, but his demotion meant that he was no longer a threat. I'm sorry. How does, like, a title on your business card make you not a threat? Like, you think Dirty Harry would have acted any different, whether he was a sergeant or a detective or a captain?
I mean, also Delaplane doesn't seem like the type of dude who's going to let that stop him from, no. I want to kill this man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So then D says that the Invisible Men are behind all of the recent killings of the auto workers union chiefs. And she says that
this is weird. It gets weird. She says the first guy.
Oh, yeah.
The one that was killed before the movie started. She said he was decapitated in an auto accident. It's like, huh? Wait. Action Jackson said earlier his murder was a carbon copy of the boat explosion.
Right, exactly.
The fuck?
It's not. Clearly, they're not paying any attention to any of this continuity.
And this is the best ever in a movie and ever will be use of the word defenestrate.
Defenestrate, which traditionally means to throw someone out of a window on fire.
Yes! That's perfect!
So
that's perfect.
Defenestrate is no longer used in that context. Now it is used in the context of a punishment as an overly harsh.
Okay.
But in the literal sense, defenestrate is literally what happened to that first guy that
that's
we saw.
That's amazing. she's doing this thing where she's emphasizing the D's and all the things. She was defenestrated and he was decapitated.
Yeah. And her name is D.
Yeah, it's the whole thing.
So it's
thing.
Like perfectly.
It works.
Yeah. It's just unfucking real. And so she tells him that all of the recent killings of the auto worker union chiefs are the work of the Invisible Men. Like, they're the ones who have been doing all of this. So she says that those are the dudes. The reason that they were killed is because they were the ones who were the only threat of stopping Delaplane's plans.
Yeah, he wants to control the union for reasons unknown.
Unknown.
Still, yeah.
But they were standing in his way, so he had them killed. So Jackson says, like, he asks, like, where can I find O'Rooney? who was the guy that we've forgotten about by this point.
Absolutely. He was mentioned in one scene earlier by Sharon Stone.
Who is long dead at this point, by the way. He is working for the union now, apparently. And Dee tells him that O'Rooney spends most of his nights at a bar called The Red Devil.
Which, how would she know that?
I don't know.
It'd be one thing if she was, like, plugged in about the stuff that's happening in her own neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly.
In her social circle. This seems like, though, she knows gossips about, like, titans of industry.
I mean, who is she giving shaves to?
Yeah,
like, that's crazy. What I want to know. It is amazing, and it is my favorite scene in the entire movie.
Oh, she slayed it.
It was unbelievable. I wanted to watch this over and over again. It makes no sense. I mean, she is a literal deus ex machina.
Absolutely.
Right.
He had nothing to go on before he came to see her.
She was literally a goddess who came down from on high to give him all of the information.
Everything
that he
you're
going to
need to solve this mystery.
Oh, my God. He didn't do any work. Like, his report at the end of all of this is like, go see D.
Fats told me to go see D. It wasn't even like I didn't even find her. Fats told me to go talk to her.
Oh, my God.
And she told me everything.
So Jackson, though, nonchalantly goes, cool, thanks for the info, and leaves.
I laughed out loud when he's like, I can't pay you. He's like, oh, by the way, I can't pay you for this, like, for the shave.
Oh, my God.
My wallet snatched. Although, we didn't see her do anything except put a warm towel on his
right,
face.
Right, exactly.
So I don't
That's
know.
Fair.
But,
That's fair.
But they did this whole scene as one shot.
Yeah.
That was cool, man.
She did that whole monologue with no cuts.
I wonder how many takes that might have taken.
I mean, this movie is so all over the place because that was, in any other movie, that would be best supporting actor nominee quality work right there.
D was putting in work all while smoking a Swisher.
Yeah, the whole time. It was literally my favorite scene in the entire movie.
She saved his ass because he had nothing to go on.
Yeah.
So anyway, he's a shit detective. That's
he's
all
a
I'm saying.
Horrible detective. Like, who can jump completely over cars?
He can
though.
Do that. He was a high school track star.
He wasn't. Thank you. I almost forgot that. Thank you for reminding
he was a
me.
High school track star.
Wow. I totally.
He
forgot
didn't make
that.
It any higher. He wasn't an Ivy League track star.
No. He couldn't get.
Like
he couldn't.
Not when he was in Harvard Law.
He was like JV in college, but we don't want to talk about that.
So shit detective, but he can really jump over cars.
Really
though.
Jump over cars. It's really yeah, good. Yeah. Actually, he was great at training. Action Jackson returns to the hotel room and surprise, surprise, Vanity's gone.
Which, why did he leave her?
I don't know.
He had earlier just told her, like, we're joined at the hip from now on.
Jesus. And then he immediately leaves and he asks Fats if Vanity left. And he says, no, I didn't see her leave. And he says, is there any drug dealers in the hotel? Fats like directs him to Mr. Quick on the third
floor. Absolutely. Because we need another character.
Yeah, yeah. So Jackson sprints away and Fats begs him to not break the door, which, okay, fair, like, fair. So we're back to Biff and his overly articulate partner.
Sure.
And they are out on patrol and they see Action Jackson's stripped car in an alley. Just, this is a really brief scene.
Yeah. How right? would they, and they're like, is that Action Jackson's car? And it's like, how would you know that? It's
Why a would strip, you see a stripped Impala?
It's like a skeleton of a car.
Right. There's almost nothing left. I mean, maybe they recognize the paint job. Maybe it was a particularly unique paint job. I don't know. Anyway, they recognize it. Cut back to Action Jackson. He burst into Mr. Quick's room, which I do love the name Mr. Quick. That's
yeah.
That's pretty slick.
It sticks more than most of the characters in this movie.
Right, exactly. Anyway, so he's literally just about to shoot Vanity up with some heroin, sweet
heroin.
It's
fucking Sonny Landham.
Fucking Sonny Landham. Motherfucker, we almost got the entire cast of Predator here yes. with us tonight.
That's a legendary dude.
Oh, my God.
He started off doing porno.
Really? Oh,
yeah,
I did
his
not
early
know
days,
that.
Yeah, in oh, like wow. real porno. But his big break was he was in The Warriors.
Yeah.
Then he was in 48 Hours and Predator, Firewalker. He was in that awful Stallone prison movie yeah. called Lock Up.
Yeah, I remember Lock Up.
But he clearly knows a little something about shooting up heroin because he's got like the right type yeah. of syringe. He's like looking for a vein.
Finally, somebody knows how to do drugs yeah. in this movie.
It's got to be Sonny Landham.
So
find me a functional addict.
And so Mr. Quixo says that the girl is with him and they immediately.
She's with me, motherfucker. It's such a weird, like, it's the obvious dialogue, but you
oh
know,
my God.
It works.
But it leads into a fight, which is awesome. So Mr. Quick tries to stab Action Jackson with a syringe, but misses over and over again. And he, like, he hits the syringe into the wall, though.
The needle is so strong that it sticks in the wall.
I know. Like, that's not... It's anyway, whatever.
I read the script online of the movie, yeah. and in the script online, Action Jackson actually gets shot up with the heroin
oh,
in this scene.
Oh, interesting.
And he becomes real horny, but we'll get more on that later.
Okay.
But yeah, in the movie, he like gets shot up with it.
Okay.
It's weird.
So he pulls a Bowie knife out, and Vanity warns Mr. Quick, you don't fuck with Action Jackson, right?
Uh-huh.
And thankfully, his reputation precedes him.
It's kind of weird because he's like, oh, this is Action Jackson, huh?
Yeah.
Like,
he knows.
I feel like he should have recognized him. Like, that's another thing in this movie. I feel like the goons in town should know who Action Jackson is.
I feel like everybody in Detroit should know who Action Jackson is. Because, like, I mean, if you think about other renegade cop movies, everybody knows who the renegade cop is, right? Yeah. No one knows
no
who
one
Jackson,
knows him.
Action Jackson is. No.
Well, he's heard of him, at least.
Well, I mean, he's heard of Action Jackson. He's never met him in person.
Right.
Because he's never been in the back of a squad
like, oh,
car.
Oh, this is Action Jackson. Okay.
Right. He's never had the opportunity to have Action Jackson tell him to mellow out before. So this is like, you know, it's like he's heard of the myth, but he's never met the
yeah,
man
sure.
kind of thing, you know? So he's finally met the man, and he's pretty excited about like taking him on and bringing him down, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And he says like, this is going to be easier than I thought. I'm going to cut you deep, motherfucker.
It's a weird line of dialogue for real.
Right. I mean, and Jackson's response is, that's good. You write your own material, which
yeah.
I don't like. Are we moving into like stand-up comedy type five jokes or what is this?
It turns into a steady diet of one-liners from Action Jackson
God.
At this point. It's like another writer stepped in.
Yeah, exactly. It is just nonstop. And none of them are any better, though.
No, it's terrible.
Right.
It's god-awful.
So Jackson stops a couple of stabs here and there. And Mr. Quick, who is like fucking cursing like a sailor the whole time.
Yeah, motherfucker.
Yeah.
A lot of motherfuckers.
Jackson punches him a bunch. They grapple. And then eventually Jackson pins him up against the wall. Mr. Quick tries to drive the knife into Action Jackson, but Jackson grabs a syringe that was stuck in the wall before.
Uh-huh.
So coming back to it,
yeah.
shoots the heroin up into Mr. Quick.
Which seemed like
Boom.
A huge like load that would put a person down.
Yeah. But again, though, it, like this movie has no context of how you actually seem to do drugs.
Yeah.
He just stabs it into his shoulder.
Like, I don't know what would happen if that happened to a human
being. I actually don't know. I have no idea.
but doesn't do shit to Sonny Lanham. He like lets out a big like laugh. He's like
it says, fuck you. Then by this point, Jackson has had enough and he said, I warned you about the bad language.
Yeah, buddy.
Now, needlessly, we cut back to Biff and overly articulate guy.
Yeah, sure.
And they're investigating the stripped car.
He's like, yeah, it's his car.
Yeah, definitely what? His car.
How do you know that? Unless there was like some identifying shit.
I mean, honestly, at this point, I'm done apologizing for this movie.
Sure. No, we got to keep it moving.
So the window above them shatters, and Mr. Quick flies out of it across the alley and through another window in the opposite building, which was fucking awesome.
That was a wild stunt.
That was a wild stunt. I loved it. I'm here for it, always. So they duck and cover because there's glass going everywhere, and they look up to see Jackson and Vanity looking down at them. They tell Jackson to wait for them, and they run off and enter the hotel.
Uh-huh.
So Jackson takes Vanity by the arm, and he gets them ready to jump out the window. Like, they're going for it.
Yeah, he's like, you got to learn to leap before you look.
Leap before you look. That's exactly right. So the cops enter the hotel room, and Action Jackson and Vanity, they jump right as the cops come in.
Yes.
And the convertible's roof breaks their fall. And I just want to say for a moment, this pays off the earlier scene where Jackson is sad and sort of despondently, sort of almost like in like mourning, brings the roof of his car up, right?
Yes.
It pays that off. I think it was accidental. I don't think that
I don't know. It was also, these were terrible stunt doubles.
Oh my God.
I'm pretty sure the woman was an Asian woman.
Yeah.
But anyway.
It didn't even look remotely alike. So Vanity wants to know why they're running from the cops. Aren't you a cop? She says. And he says, well, of course he is, which is why it's okay for him to steal Biff's car, which I actually thought was a pretty funny line. So they jump in the police car and the cops yell at the window for them to stop. Okay. Are these cops supposed to be comic relief?
Sure.
Okay.
I think for sure they has to be.
Like, what? It's not.
They're the bumbling idiots.
Yeah, they're the bumbling idiots. Like, through the whole movie, there's so many reoccurring non-consequential characters in this movie. It's
absolutely
very distracting.
They don't ever contribute to the plot.
No, none. Not whatsoever. Right. Exactly. Anyway, so the cops run back through the lobby and Fats laughs at them this time.
That's where he's like, you guys need a bath house. I can recommend a bath house. Which I was like, is the insinuation that they just fucked or something?
Yeah, that is exactly what I think he was insinuating.
Okay, and it's real just, quick.
It's like, okay, great, cool guys.
We get it.
So they run outside and they see their car driving away and they try to steal a woman's VW Beetle.
Uh-huh.
And they scream, police emergency, we're commandeering your car. And her response is, which is great.
Yes.
The fuck you are. And she drives away.
I
which
love
is
that shit.
Brilliant.
That feels like more like real life. Yeah. We've seen a million movies where you just like stop with someone and take their car. I'm like, oh, hell no, you're not taking my car.
Oh, fucking no. This is not happening.
This is also another part where it was a big departure from the script I read where they do commandeer a car.
Okay.
And there's like a big elaborate crazy chase scene like through a golf course and all, like that would have cost probably a fortune.
Oh my God.
Also, Action Jackson's high and horny on heroin during it all, where he's like trying to kiss Vanity and saying like she should give him a blowjob. It's crazy shit.
That is bonkers.
I feel like at some point there must have been a decision made that like Action Jackson needs to be a virtuous guy.
Yeah.
And he would never get accidentally shot up with heroin and get horny. This is that horny heroin.
Yeah,
you know?
I 100% agree that is exactly what happened.
No. He's a good guy.
And so like, yeah, and I think that probably came from Weathers.
Yeah, he's and, like, no, he should be a hero for, like, the black community.
Right, exactly. Which, I get it. Like, I totally fucking understand, like, him trying to be virtuous and a winner and a hero, and heroes don't do drugs and all of that shit. So I 100% get it. But the problem is, but the consequence of that is you have to cut an entire car chase from the movie.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. But anyway, so they're in the car, and Vanity demands to know why they're running from the police. And Jackson explains that Delaplane murdered his wife and then planted the body at his place. She said that she's fed up with all of this bullshit and just wants some heroin. I remember watching this And when she says that line, I'm like, yeah, girl, I'm right there with you.
Me too. Me too.
I'm here for it.
Yeah. Come on.
So she tells him to just give her some money and drop her off somewhere. And Action Jackson says that she won't last long enough to enjoy the drugs as long as Delaplaine's invisible men are still looking for her.
Right.
Vanity protests. Action Jackson whips a car down a dead-end road and then fucking floors it to a dead wall, like heading straight to a dead wall.
This bit makes no sense at all.
None.
Like, maybe if he was high.
Right.
Like he was supposed to be or
right.
something.
Exactly. But
as it is, I'm like, this mm-hmm. is bizarre behavior.
So Action Jackson says, like, look, if you want a rush, I'm going to fucking give you a rush. Right? Mm-hmm. And so he demands that she help him bring Delaplaine down. If not, he's going to kill them both right now. So
he's threatening to murder her, right?
Basically, yeah. Help me or I'm going to murder you.
I will murder you if you don't do what I want.
Straight up murder suicide.
Like, this is our hero.
Right, exactly.
It's just
the car, I don't even know why, but it jumps off of a something.
He goes airborne like there was a ramp.
Right, exactly.
No explanation
lands
for that.
Lands completely undamaged and continues to head towards a brick wall. Vanity is terrified and says, okay, I'll help you. Like, she fucking, who wouldn't? Like, I would, at that point, I would literally say anything.
For sure.
Right? Especially when I'm coming down on heroin. Anyway, so Jackson now, because he's a manipulative son of a bitch, pretends that he doesn't hear her and makes her scream it over and over again, which is so unnecessary.
Now it's like, he's like toying with her.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like he's getting off on how terrified she is.
I mean, this is straight up narcissist shit. I mean, like, just unbelievable. So at the last second, though, Jackson slams the brake, whips the wheel around, and then the car skids to a stop right against the wall. Which, I mean, we knew it was going to happen because the movie has to have an ending.
Yeah.
His line, though, is, that wasn't so bad now, was it? And he he says that she is fucking traumatized.
Yeah.
Like, this is Iraq torture level shit where the guy is just going to tell you anything you want to hear to make the pain stop. Right.
Uh-huh.
So she wonders aloud why she's putting up with this shit and says it must be his charms and good looks, which is like, oh my God.
It's the guy, he's getting flirty now.
Oh my God.
It's like, he's an emotionally abusive dude.
Dude, completely.
In general, I feel like they're like, then there's but they share a big laugh.
Right, exactly. They do. Almost like an 80s opening credits laugh. Like they lean
freeze
back,
freeze frame
the whole thing. Right, exactly.
Everything about this last scene was all wrong.
Oh my God. Unbelievable. And honestly, we need a break too.
Yeah, please.
After all of this nonsense.
Oh my Jesus Christ.
So we're going to totally take a break right now. We got one more episode to bring all of this nonsense to a conclusion.
Somehow.
But we'll be back next week, everybody.